Well, good evening, everyone. Three black people across the way here. It's wonderful to see you three. Back from LA?
Yeah.
Good? Good. And you've been here before?
Yeah.
You have. You have too. Very happy to see you all. Let's do introductions, sir.
Wendy,
Keen,
Eric,
Nestor,
Ross,
Jeffrey,
Roman,
Marie,
Ron.
And Roman, it's been a long time since we've seen you.
Christmas vacation.
Yes. Yes. Great. Well, we're in the middle of this book. Each Moment is the Universe. It's a great title. and we've come to part four, which is the practice of creative action. So, if Zen is about anything, it's about activity. It's how we actually understand life. And if you try to be philosophical about Buddha, nature, and the universe, and all the ways that things are put together, in the end, you have to come back over and over to just sheer activity. We vow to be active. We sit in order to stand up and enact the life of us. And sitting itself is an enaction of our life. Katagiri Roshi said, Zen practice is a practice of action. He says sometimes people think that Zen practice is a bridge between suffering and happiness. That we practice first and then we'll be happy. Good luck. But practice and happiness are not separate. Practice is not a bridge, it's a joy. So entering Buddha's path is arousing Bodhi mind. Bodhi mind is translated as the way mind or way seeking mind, but it really means enlightenment. It means that Buddha's mind is the way, or way-seeking mind. In the early years when we were practicing at Haiku Zendo with Koban, he decided that we should have a Sangha name. And so we asked him to think about it, and he thought and thought, and he named us Bodhi. And we said, oh, what does that mean? And he said, it means enlightenment. And we thought, oh, little shrimpy, foolish us are being named enlightenment, this little dinky group in Los Altos. It just seemed absurd. But actually, the more we lived with it, the more we could realized that we were sharing it with everyone. We did a fundraising and showed movies and had Japanese people doing wonderful things for us and sharing it all with the neighbors, and it suddenly became, it wasn't about us. It was about the whole thing happening as we were sitting, as our sitting allowed us to offer it. He said, the right path to be walked, extending in all directions, continuously open to everyone. So the word right isn't based on an idea of right and wrong or good and bad. Right means the complete, perfect harmony of the phenomenal world of time, which we create from moment to moment. Our time, how we make it. And it also means the source of existence, the eternal world of timelessness. So we live our time and enact our time within timelessness. And we know that because when we stop, suddenly we begin to lose the sense of linear time, and timelessness is obvious. And he says, in timelessness, all sentient beings are always interconnected in peace and harmony. From one side, it doesn't look like that. From the other side, it can. He says, when you fully devote yourself to your activity, the moment and you come together, creating a kind of momentum or energy. You and your activity become one. And as I said last week, we experience that in Zazen sometimes. As we sit down and our minds are very busy, we're coming from somewhere that's very busy. And when we sit, of course, our minds just keep going and going and going. But it gets boring, and after a while it begins to slow down. And we begin to lose the sense of the importance of all that stuff and discover what it is to be quiet, just to be still. And he says, when there's no self-consciousness, it's called bodhi. Enlightenment. When we lose the sense of ourself as something crucially important, and separate from everyone else, that creates a lot of discomfort, a lot of unsatisfactory feeling, kind of misery. Underlying misery. But once we feel the connection, everyone is enlightening us as we're actually enlightening everyone else. Moment by moment by moment, we move through the world connecting, constantly connecting, and being connected. We notice it. There's joy in it. That's our practice. He says, when you practice Buddhism, when you do Zazen especially, there are three points: the time, the place, and the person. First, the time. What's the best time? Well, really, there's no best time. Whenever you have a moment, it's a really good time. The place makes a difference. It's always helpful if you have your own place in your own house, have a separate place for practice. Sometimes that's not possible. Sometimes if you just say to yourself, every time I pass through this doorway, I'm going to stop. and breathe for a minute. That's practice too. Sometimes we have to do that because we're so busy. But it's always important to discover a place and become that place in a way that your practice becomes that place. And it actually fills the house after a while. You begin to sense it filling up the house in which you're sitting. So he says, first you have a time and a place, so it's necessary to be somebody. A person is the unity of body and mind, but usually you're caught by the form of your body and your mind becomes separate. For body to participate in mind, we have to practice concentration, full devotion. This is very important. When you fully devote yourself to your activity, your body becomes one with your consciousness. So we know this when we're drawing a picture. We forget everything, really. We aren't what we think of as me. It's just the picture and this thing that's happening between this and that, and this and that become one complete, perfect thing as we do it. When I talk a bit about this, I always want my sketchbook and I start drawing flowers. It helps to choose a good place. And if we have the power to do that, it's great to be in nature. And you can see that most Zen centers end up in nature or have a fallback the way San Francisco Zen Center does. They have Green Gulch right behind them across the bridge. So that's very, very helpful. We have Chikoji right behind us up the hill. There is in nature the kind of wisdom that we respond to deeply. And from which we can learn enormously. But very much most of us have to live in the city or the suburbs or in some kind of noisy place. And still, it's important to make a place there. It's just for practice. To be the person in the place and create the time. So you can see it's all self-created. And of course, you can get creative about the place and make yourself. I know several people who made little Buddhas for it. Table, and then they put a candle on it, and a flower, and then suddenly they have a little altar. It's a very natural human thing to do. I know Charles Dickens always had to have a fresh flower before he sat down at his desk. That was a sort of ceremonial ritual that he had. You know, there was an artist who had to draw something. He had to draw a rock or something before he could do his work. So we can study ourselves and study what we need, because each one of us needs our own way, our own path, you could say, to enact this Buddha life in a way that comes to us as the most sensible way for each one of us. So it won't be the same. sometimes people complain because Zen teachers aren't the same. You know, oh, so-and-so isn't like everybody else. Well, of course, neither are you or you or you or any of us. We're all so different. And it's the best. It's the best part of it. So then he continues with the flow of the rhythm of life. And this is something that Dogen talks about, flowing, how things never are still. Everything is flowing. And of course we have this now of talking about in sports about the flow and discovering the flow. And Dogen talked about it 500 years ago. So it's not a new thing, but it's important to address it. His example is driving. He says that when he first started to learn to drive, he was terrified and he did a terrible job. He was very self-conscious and he just could hardly do it, and he was extremely dangerous on the road because he was so unused to it, not knowing what to do. And then, and I'm sure most of us have had this experience, you just become one with the car and the road and everything that's going around you, so that driving becomes, in some cases, a real pleasure. That the whole thing just flows and feels like it's supposed to be like that. He said, when you're driving safely, your mind is never caught in a certain place. That's the trick. You keep going. Your mind has to keep going along with the car. If your mind's caught, you become confused and scared. That's just like our practice. In the beginning, we don't trust our practice. It's shaky. We don't know what to pay attention to ourselves, to zazen, to space. Some people space out right away because they think that's what they're supposed to do. Whoa! But no. We know that we should accept the whole situation, but we don't know how. At that time, all you can do is try to be present in this very moment. Unknown time and space is within this moment. All of nature is here, and myriad beings are walking together with us. So just continue to act with total devotion to what you're doing until there's total oneness between you and your activity. That's called samadhi. You and your and nature melt into one. If you're driving, you become one with driving. Full devotion to driving. We don't say that really usually. I'm fully devoted to driving. But when you get in the car, really, you better be. And that's a problem because many people are not. They find other things to do while they're driving, and it gets to be a very serious problem in our world. So giving yourself to what you're doing, it's what is he is pointing to as flow. Just surrendering to what activity you are at the moment. You actually are the activity. So surrender to it and be that. And then be flexible, because, of course, who knows where the next red light is going to be, or the next car is going to swerve, or so you need to be very alert and aware. And aware is a crucial word in Zen. Aware means awake, really wide awake. Awake in the present moment, and awake to whatever comes next. So you see how active it is, so much action. And of course, our bodies are themselves are action. They're constantly at work, keeping it all together. And the mind is too. The mind is keeping everything coherent and sensible so that we're not totally confused all the time. And really, the mind is Buddha. Our Buddha is the mind. Mind / body. There's no separation. I did my exercises to a TED talk the other day. It's really fun to listen to something interesting. It was about the gut bacteria and how intelligent they are. I thought, oh, this is great. I'm doing my body and I'm learning about it, and it's smarter than I am. It was super. So he says, devoting yourself to accomplishing something, naturally you experience no self-consciousness. You just drop your self-consciousness. We think we know who we are, but we really don't. We're just putting up some kind of front, the way we think we ought to look so that people won't laugh at us or turn away. But we don't know how we look, really. We don't really know who we are. So it's a very nice feeling to stop doing that and just eagerly be willing to relate. So he talks about momentum. He talks about skiing. And skiing, like driving, is a devoted practice, and one that's full of flow. You really can't ski down a mountain without being totally connected to the mountain, otherwise you fall down. He said, when you really enjoy what you're doing, then maybe you'd say it's fun. But what you enjoyed is not merely something that gives pleasure to you. There is something deep there, and that's called enlightenment. So if you're one with your skis, the mountain, and the snow, you're just the practice of skiing. You are the whole of it. You're the mountain as well as the trees and the snow and the skis. And you ski because you and the mountain are in balance. There's a peaceful feedback from your activity. Some kind of momentum or energy is going between you and the mountain. So that's the energy, the activity. And that's true of everything. Every blade of grass that we meet is the same. He says, I think everyone experiences oneness with activity, but it's very difficult to be there and maintain it because we don't accept this comfortable situation with complete confidence. Sometimes we get scared of it. Consciously or unconsciously, we want to come back to the form of our body. So we're caught by a habit and return to the human world. However, if you want to practice the spiritual life, you have to see your human life in terms of oneness. If you practice hard, you can see oneness. You can attain enlightenment. You can experience a lot. So, I think that's enough. Of course, defining oneness is a tricky business. Oneness just means all of it. There isn't any way that we can separate. Ultimately, there is no separation. And when things get too gnarly, it's really helpful to remember that. Oh, I'm not alone. I'm not all by myself. I'm with everybody and everything. It's gonna be all right. Other questions? Comments?
It seems that some people get caught up in the intense feeling of oneness, activity that really takes them out of themselves. The activity of downhill mountain biking, skiing,
yes,
or running.
Yes.
There's people that get elevated just running.
Oh, it brings out the endorphins in your body. It creates a real high to do those things.
So they think that that's their spiritual practice.
Well, some people do. Some people think playing golf is spiritual practice, too. I know several gentlemen who said that they wouldn't want to go to church, but they do their church out in the golf course. So there are different strokes for different folks. But if we're understanding our practice, it's not about, practice skiing, certainly, or mountain biking or any of those things. But once you get down to the Zamai Osamai, the samadhi of samadhi, which is what Dogen called it, when you're not doing those things anymore, you're just sitting down and dropping yourself off and experiencing the oneness without all that other stuff going on. So once you know how to do that in Zazen, you can do it anywhere at any time. You can do it in a supermarket, you can do it on a highway, you can do it anywhere. Because that's the truth of it. You just experience the truth of it. If you think it's only on the ski slope, you haven't gone far enough. And you should sit down for a while. See how you can do it even, you know, in a sick bed or anywhere. Danya?
At what point would you recommend somebody become a monastic, or monastic?
Well, that's true devotion. And it's a difficult life. I always feel sorry for people who are ordained because it's harder. Just because you vow to take on as much as you possibly can. So, if you feel that way, if that's a very strong impulse in your heart and mind, you should do it. But never do it in order to be something special, because it's not special. Kogan always said, with every ordination, please remember that you are not elevated in this to receive something like this. It's a stepping down. You step down into harder and harder work.
Well, one thing, I was on that session, the Rohatsu, because I couldn't make the one with you. I was on a cruise. But one of the things I recognized is that I was raised Christian, and in a way it's like your native tongue. You know, so in a sense I struggled with Christianity and have some sense of what it's trying to say, whereas when I started to go to Zen Buddhist, it's like I felt like I'm not going to struggle so much. And I mean, to me, what you were talking about, Christianity seems much more basic, where it's like I feel bad about myself, but if I, there's some sort of sense of faith that there's nothing wrong with me. But what I hear you saying is that it's almost like there's this fantastic sort of, I need to feel at one, I need, you know, it's almost like it seems so far removed from my world, but it also seems like I don't understand the language, you know.
Yeah.
It seems like on some level it's irrelevant what I feel, that when I sit, you know, the Soto Zen is like your enlightenment is just sitting, which means that it's absolutely irrelevant what I feel. It's absolutely irrelevant what I think, that there's something happening irregardless, which is very Christian in that sense. But with these talks, it almost feels like there's something wrong with me if I'm not feeling at one, or if I'm, you know, like, for example, I live over there, and there's this intersection where it's like I'm paying attention, but somehow I miss this pedestrian, or, you know, so it's like I'm paying attention, but still I can make a mistake, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're opening up what actually I have a question mark in here, because I have a question about the same thing, that the way this is being expressed in this book creates that sense of separation, really, that we have to work hard to be one with everything. But what I'm saying is that we are one with everything. You don't have to think you're not, because you can just think about it, that where you are is connected to the floor, to the rug, the floor, the floor to the ground to the next layer, all the way through to the core of the earth and then out the other side, and then everywhere. So it's that sense of bigness that our mind is very big, and we get stuck in a very small square of it. And what Zazen gives us is the sense that we don't have to be stuck in this little place and stuck in this sense of ourself as being good or bad or up or down or in or out, but just be. So the sense of sin is not so strong in Buddhism, at least in Zen Buddhism. We make endless mistakes, just one mistake after another. So it's not about being perfect. The perfection is in our imperfection. And that's true of everybody else, too. So if we see somebody and we think, ah, then realize that that's perfect, too. Thank you for bringing that up. That's really important. Well, it's just at 8 o'clock. So we must flow into the solstice, which happens very shortly, and enter winter, a whole new season. Dogen says, now remember, autumn does not become winter. Autumn is its own thing, and winter is its own thing. Something flows. So we're going to flow into winter.
And what, want to tell them about the solstice celebration? Oh,
yes, I should mention that at City Hall, San Jose City Hall, there's going to be a memorial service at 11 o'clock in the morning on the patio outside on the sidewalk for all the homeless people who've died during this year. We do it every year. Homeless people come for it and talk about their friends who passed away, and many, many different people come. Sufis come, and Catholics, and other Buddhists, and everybody comes in robes, and everybody has something to say. It's quite an amazing thing to see. So everyone's invited.
Yes, Thursday, the 21st.
Yes.
And then Christmas is, what day is that? Monday?
Monday.
So Samia, those of you who know Samia, has an open house traditionally on Christmas Day. If anyone would like to come and be around the people and good. She's opening her house. 14475 Caven Lane in Monte Sereno.
Oh. Also, I'll be giving a talk on Sunday, the New Year talk on the 30th.
Yeah. New Year's Eve.
The morning of
at Chikoji.
I think it's the 31st.
So it's New Year's Eve.
Right. What time is your talk?
11:30
PM or AM?
AM. AM. Michael will give the evening talk.
I won't bring any shot. Okay. Don't they sit on that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, they do actually. I just told you, they said that they will have 108.
Yes, always 108 bells at midnight.
They have that.
Yes.
So they start, I think, at 6 and they end at midnight, and they just celebrate with sweets or whatever. So.
Yes.
That would be the evening.
Yes. In the mountains in Austria, we used to, Vanya used to make balloons and put a little fire in it, and they would go up. It was so wonderful, standing in the snow with balloons going up. We can't do that here, but.
Nope, don't even have a bonfire.
No, afraid not. Is there anything else? Okay, let's do our 1 minute sit.